just to get down. Devin now. I wake up just to get down. Devin now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Ranked by their stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. The knees of the bees, man, people's champ, man, true now. I trust them with everything, every conference giving me confidence. Hipping is hopping and really no stopping them. Make you a champion, y'all put a sock in it, woo! But this is life, bro, they're at it all night though. So you can just drive slow and get down with the Devi crew.
I wake up just to get down. Devi now. I wake up just to get down. Devi now. Hey, I wake up just to get down.
I don't know if they're
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Devi Happy Hour, episode 31. We're your source of Devi knowledge as it pertains to college football landscape. Find us on Twitter at Devi Happy Hour, and our email is DeviHappyHour@gmail.com. First up, I want to introduce my illustrious, wonderful co-host, Mr. Matt Griffith from Out West. How you doing, bud?
Man, enjoying it. Not enjoying the big injury that happened that we'll get into, but football's going good, man. A lot of good NFL Sundays, and really just starting to look at where we are, some of our picks and where they are falling. You know, you guys, it's trying to accumulate 2020 picks in non-Devi leagues, but for these rookie drafts coming up and trying to see where these picks are starting to fall, trying to judge where you're going to be able to get certain guys. So this is a lot of fun for me, and I like playing these games out. So it's that time of year, man. We're getting ready to start getting ready for rookie drafts, man. You know, even though we're not even in the playoffs yet, but we're getting closer.
Yeah, I'm starting to like kind of shift that direction too, getting excited about it. So, and I love the offseason when you get to watch more tape and stuff too. So, all right, other co-host, Ray Garvin. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing well, fellas. Excited to talk to you tonight. I got my road dog with me, literally. So say what up to the people, Book. This is Booker right here. Y'all can't see him, but it's my pup.
I like it, man. Cool. Mine's somewhere. I don't know where mine's a little lap dog, though. That's my wife's dog. My dog's like a beagle. He's not going to get on my lap. He's just a big old dumb dog. All right, guys. We're going to quick dive into some takeaways from Week 12. Week 12 was kind of a crazy week, obviously dominated by the Tua Tagovailoa. I never even say his last name. Tua's injury. So, like, we're getting a little more clarification now after it's been a couple days, you know. It looks like, you know, they're saying now he can start in 4 months, I believe, like start to kind of do football activity types. And so it definitely looks pretty good. I think next year playing is still probably pretty up in the air at this point. I don't know if there's really been a definitive we can make that guess here or anything. But kind of, Matt, I haven't really heard your take on this. What do you think? Do you think he's going to go? I mean, I've heard a lot, like, he, you know, some people think he'll go back, but I also heard he had an insurance policy that would, he would kind of lose it if he went back. And so do you think he's going to enter the draft? What do you think is, I'm just kind of curious what you think of it, man.
That's interesting, the insurance policy side of things, but part of me still thinks he comes out, because even if he goes back to Bama and has to sit out while he takes a medical red shirt and he's not playing for two more years, and, you know, he, part of the whole deal with his brother going there, he wanted to kind of pave the way and get out of the way for his brother. Who knows if his brother even takes a starting job there in a couple of years or not, but I could see him still declaring, still going into the draft, still going in the first round. But this is what makes it really interesting too, because you start to look like, okay, if he fades now and he goes middle to tail end of the first, is he going to like a San Diego, an LA Chargers type team? Or somebody said it the other day on Twitter and it blew my mind, because it seems, well, why not, but New England Patriots, the amount of guys that they've taken in second, third rounds or whatever, let them kind of develop the resets, the Jimmy G's, all this stuff. You telling me you couldn't plug Tua in there for a year or two, maybe a year, and then let Tom Brady ride out, and then you got Tua in that offense with that coach? Lord help us all. You know what I mean? But I hope he comes out. I hope the recovery's not as bad. I mean, I know a lot of people reference Bo Jackson, but this was, you know, this is not 1987 or whatever when they have that kind of technology. They were all over this. Bo's, they kind of pushed off for several days because they didn't know what it was. Way different situation. And, you know, if you know Tua and you know the Samoan folks, man, he'll come back stronger than ever. He's not down for the count. So it's really a matter of what the capital is now. I still think he's going to go to first round grade. So why not come out? And I think Ray talked about, but like Jalen Smith sitting out for a year, if you have to learn the NFL system, learn how it operates, the offense, everything else may not be the worst thing in the world.
Right. I would be stunned if he made it through to the Patriots. I mean, the Dolphins have 3 picks, and if they don't take him at 4 or 5, wherever they're drafting, they'll definitely take him with the 2nd or 3rd one, I think. So, yeah, I think it behooves him to come out. The insurance policy was, you know, it guards against that. Like, the money he loses from being the first pick to, like, saying he's the 21st, the insurance policy will cover that. But if he goes back to school, the insurance policy gets nullified. So, and I don't know. I think it'd be a weird decision because he's a great quarterback, but then next year you're going to have to contend with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and, you know, Brock Purdy and all that. So it's not a guarantee that he's going to be picked any bit higher next year, especially if he doesn't play all year. So is that kind of the boat you're in also, Ray?
Yeah, I really don't even think it's a question for me. He's going to declare. I mean, what's the point of going back? And I think about it from, if his ultimate goal is to play in the NFL, then you declare where you don't have to worry about going to classes and you can fully devote yourself to getting prepared for the NFL game. I mean, they've got the best of the best doctors. Hopefully he doesn't land with the Redskins because we know what happens with that. But other than, I mean, he's not having to go to class. He doesn't have to, and it's not, and I'm not trying to diminish his education, but I meant full time from the time he wakes up to the time he goes to sleep will be dedicated to getting his body in shape to perform at an NFL level. And even if it's a redshirt season for Tua in 2020, I'd be fine with that. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I don't think that's always a bad thing for a quarterback to sit and learn. And if anything, if he does fall, I don't believe he's falling out of the first round. I made the proclamation that the Patriots would swoop him up before that happens. And it could yield for him landing in a better situation. I mean, a team may get a discount. Let's just say hypothetically, he went to the Chargers. If he started slipping a little bit in a team like the Saints, we saw the Saints trade up for Marcus Davenport a couple of years ago. What if they said, we're jumping up, we're grabbing this guy, he's going to sit behind Breeze for the next year or two and just learn? I think he's declaring. There's nothing left for him to prove. He's been the starter for 3 years. He's been to 2 national championships, won one. There's no point in going back to college. And then, like Matt said, the insurance policy, I believe in 80%. If what we were expecting was 2 at 100%, I think if we get 80% of him for his career, that's better than 10 to 12 quarterbacks starting right now. So I'd be fine taking that.
And then a year also, he can also, you know, take some time off those ankles and, you know, just heal up. I mean, he's taken a beating at Alabama, so it definitely would not hurt him at all to sit a year. So speaking of another awesome quarterback, Ray, I kind of wanted to do a breakdown. I didn't get to watch much of this game. I kind of caught most of the second half where the Jalen Hurts comeback versus Baylor. That was just you see a down game for this guy, and it's still amazing. And he still has, you know, that command without C.D. Lamb to lead his team back. And I was just super impressed with Jalen Hurts this weekend.
Yeah, I was. That game, Baylor should have won that game. Oklahoma had no reason winning that game. I don't know. Well, I do know how they came back, and it was some good defensive stops. Baylor let off the gas, and Jalen Hurts was absolutely unstoppable, and he took over. You know, when you look at his stats for that game, 30 for 42, he still completed 71% of his passes, 297, 4 TDs, one interception, 27 carries for 114 yards. I mean, he took it over. It was like he said, the hell with it. We're not losing this game. And I really liked what I saw. He did miss some easy throws. One of his fumbles literally came at the goal line. I mean, he was crossing the end zone and the ball got poked out. things that Jalen Hurts doesn't normally do. And he said it after the game, I put my team in a position to lose, so I felt like it was my job to get them back and to win that game for them. And, I mean, stuff like that, not every game isn't going to be pretty. Every NFL performance, it's not going to be clean. It's not going to be pretty. Look at Patrick Mahomes on Monday, 180 passing yards, an interception. I mean, but he got the job done. And I think that I walked away impressed with Jalen Hurts' ability to come back in Waco down 20-something points to pull that off. He showed me a lot, man. I really like this kid's makeup. I don't like the fact that he carried the ball 27 times, but he's built different than a Lamar Jackson. He's really put together very well. So I was impressed by Hurts in that game. And you said it, Dwight, no CeeDee Lamb.
And it's the efficiency, man. 73% on the year. That's for someone that can't throw. I hear that constantly. He can't throw. He can't throw. And I'm like, and you even go back to when he was a freshman at Alabama. He had 63% as a freshman. So the guy can throw. He can take care of the ball. He may not have the cannon, you know, like that some people want, but he takes care of the ball. And that's you know, give me a quarterback that can't throw that takes care of the ball any day of the week. I'll take that. But he can throw. It drives me nuts to hear that, man. So just, nuts. Anyway. All right, Matt, you got anything on that, bud?
No, just that I become more and more of a fan of Hurts as the year goes on. You know, like you said, a down week in the passing game was like, but he also had a down week rushing stat line that Jonathan Taylor had in the middle stretch of the season. You know what I'm saying? 27 for 114 or whatever. It's like, well, okay, well, that works out great too, fantasy-wise, right? That's what we're talking about. I'm looking forward to watching him on Sundays. It'll be fun to see how he kind of takes his game and everything that we're seeing with the Lamars and everything else. So, I don't know, man. He's just a stud. He's a good guy. He's fun to watch. Also with that game too, man, Kenneth Murray continues to impress me. That dude flies around. I know we don't talk about defense that much, but I want him in silver and black next year, dude. He would be a terrific Raider. They could use a guy like him, but I'm a big fan of him as well.
Oh, he's a grown-ass man. I love watching that kid play. All right, and then that kind of rolls over. Like, so Oklahoma's lurking on the outside of this playoff picture now. Like, if Alabama stumbles a little bit, you know, that, and one of the top four, you know, if Georgia falls and Alabama stumbles, you know, a little bit with Mac Jones at the helm, you know, Oklahoma's lurking there. Like, if they take care of business, if they win the Big 12 championship, they could be right there too. So they're not out of the way. And then LSU kind of, it looked like this invincible team so far this year, but boy, their defense looked so bad last week. Like Mississippi State, Mississippi State, wasn't it? Or Ole Miss? I get those two mixed up all the time. Yeah, I don't know why. They're nowhere near the same. They're one's in script and blue and red, and the other's in red and white. Yeah, I still get them mixed up all the time. Ole Miss had over 400 yards rushing against LSU, and they just made them look. Their defense looked so bad, and almost let Ole Miss take care of the game, which was crazy. So is that LSU's defense, is it a liability going into this like stretch here? Like, I think they've got a couple other big games coming up too. They got Georgia obviously in the title game, and this could be a liability to them. I think it is heading into this championship, especially into the BCS. But I'm kind of just curious if you guys had any thoughts on that.
I think it was that classic letdown after the big win. You know, I know that LSU, I think they were favored by almost 30 points, but I thought that Ole Miss would give them a game. Coming off of that game versus Alabama, the emotional high, it was one of those trap games. I didn't think LSU would lose it, but they did make it a little close for comfort. So I just think it was a product of, I mean, Joe Burrow, for his 5 touchdowns and Ja'Marr Chase's 1,000 receiving yards, he had 2 interceptions, just kind of haphazardly throwing the ball a couple of times. They just didn't play well. And Orgeron said it after the game. He was like, we didn't play well. We got the win, but we didn't play well. And I sort of expected that after that big game in Tuscaloosa and that big win. So I'm not concerned, but it could. But I don't think it will affect them now, because I don't think there's anybody in the SEC that can score like that to keep up with them. But if they get matched up against an Ohio State, if they're matched up against, you know, Clemson or one of those teams in the first round of the playoffs, it can be a big problem.
Right. Yeah, they have Arkansas and Texas A&M, so nothing. But I think that Ole Miss kind of presented some problems with that running, with that quarterback. I said running back. He pretty much is a running back. The John Rhys-Plumlee, who's got 1,000 yards rushing this year, 11 touchdowns, and he's the quarterback. So, yeah, he specifically was the one that seemed like he was doing most of the damage. So,
well, and you could, like you said, you could almost see it. So Georgia probably gets knocked out after when they got to play LSU, right? So if they play LSU, lose to LSU, Oklahoma jumps up to the four spot, just, you know, theoretically here. So Oklahoma, LSU in the first game of the playoffs, that's a tough offense, right? Oklahoma's offense is no joke. So that could be a real test for LSU. That could actually be like a huge shootout, you know, similar to the Alabama LSU game. But that could be a tough test, man. And, you know, on the flip side, LSU or, you know, Oklahoma's defense is nothing, you know, crazy except for the studs that we were talking about. But I don't know. That would be an interesting matchup for sure. That'd be a fun one.
All right, speaking of LSU, I was kind of going through my rankings today, and I've been more and more impressed with Ja'Marr Chase every week. Like, he had another huge game last week. I think it was like 220 yards, 3 touchdowns on like 7 catches, something like that. And what do you, Ray, I'm curious, I'll start with you. What do you think about him? I moved him up to number 2 or 3. I can't remember. Behind Ron, I still have Rondale Moore as my first number one coming out in 2021. What do you think of Chase's ascension? Where do you have him in your rank?
Right now, I've got him 2 behind Rondale Moore, but I could make the case for Ja'Marr Chase to be the wide receiver 1 in 2021. I don't think anybody would be crazy to do that. You know, LSU's got a pedigree for having productive and talented wide receivers, but when you just watch this kid play, he may not be as explosive as Rondale Moore, but he's not 10 steps behind him either. I mean, he can go get it. He's 6'1", 205 pounds, so he's obviously got the size advantage over Rondale Moore. The production is there. What he's doing in that offense and how he's doing it, I walk away impressed every week. He's so damn physical. He's fast. He's big-bodied. Right now, he's wide receiver 2 in 2021 for me, but you know, landing spot, man. If he landed in a situation, I'd have no problem. Whereas coming into the season, I wouldn't have cared if Rondale Moore was drafted by an AAF team. I'm taking him 101. I would consider Ja'Marr Chase at this point as the wide receiver 1 in that class. He's that good.
He's a ton of fun to watch, man.
I went back to look for my notes because we did in the offseason before Ray joined on, we did a whole buy, sells through every conference, right? And that's when I really dove into Ja'Marr Chase. And not doing a victory lap and not saying I discovered him by any stretch, but that's what really, like, for me, it was like, whoa. This guy has a ton of ability. And ever since then, I put him on a close watch. Dwight, the college football league that we're in with Travis May, I remember taking him and seeking him out to get him. And he's been a monster on my squad. But I felt like he wasn't talked about enough early on. And then it took, obviously, you know, you got to see it for most people for it to roll. But golly, has he ascended in quickness. And there's no denying it anymore. And there's no, unless you're under a rock somewhere, but I love it, dude. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I love it because every game that I've seen him this year, like even against Alabama, he looked like he was just playing with kids. Like, he looked like a man out there playing with kids. Like even against Alabama, like he's that much. He dominates everybody that lines up against him, like opposite of him. He's so much fun to watch. He's a nightmare. He's a mismatch. So, like, he's just, I absolutely love him. So yeah, I think I moved him up to 2 or 3. I can't remember, but. That is my last takeaway. It's kind of a vague one, but just one thing I want to look at. I saw a stat, and I can't remember exactly what it was. There's more teams outside the top, you know, the big Power 5 and the top 25 than there was in history or something. Like, just recently, I think there was like 6 teams at one point. I think a couple of them fell out this last week. But I'm just excited in the off season to really dive into, like, I know a couple of these guys are actually in Power 5, like, but they're not. They're like smaller schools and stuff, like the Memphis, the Appalachian States, SMU, Cincinnati. Guys, I really want. Those are ones I don't get a chance every week to watch as much as I want to. But so they got some guys that are putting up some silly, silly, stupid numbers. And what I do see, what limited amount I do see, they're just amazing, amazing kids. And I'm kind of looking forward to watching that in the off season. So kind of. I don't know if you got any. It really wasn't one I thought about for you guys, but just kind of an observation. You know, this one's that I want to pay attention to in the off season. So Fresno State.
Well, it's a good observation. Yeah. Nah, not so much on Fresno State, but it's a good observation because, you know, with Antonio Gandy-Golden, you know, for example, small school guy, we all love it. What's not to love? Who doesn't like underdogs for the most part, right? So you got the SMUs of the world and who shouldn't even be in the top, you know, whatever in their own state, let alone in the top 25 in the country. And Memphis, man, put them on the – I love it. You know, this is cool. I like to see these things. You like to see these underdog storylines, dudes getting the high stage, the biggest stage when before they're told you have to go to a SEC school to get the big stage or whatever. So it's not impossible. It's a great reminder that NCAA football is NCAA football, and you could be at Liberty, you could be at LSU – if you're good, if your team's good, if you come together and play, you could be playing on, you know, through December and into January.
Matt, you ready to take us out west, man? You got a pretty good rundown this week. So what do you got for games of the week out west, man?
Yeah, so we've had a couple down weeks for games out here, but we got a couple really good rivalry games. So first one, UCLA is going to USC, making the big trip all the way across town, but it's a huge game, man. This is the battle for LA, you know. So it's a battle, you know, the rivalry for the victory bell. And although I would expect USC to win this game, it's going to be tough. You know, it's just how this goes. We get into the rivalries and people start playing each other tough. So lots of talent on the field, and the receivers have really taken the spotlight from the SC side. Michael Pittman, you know, kind of emerging as that guy, although everyone thought maybe he was third on the list before the season, right? And we've talked about these guys flip-flopping all year long, but yeah, he's a stud, and I see his name popping up more and more and more, and I love it. And I know Ray has been high on him since preseason, and it's cool to see that kind of unfold. But I love this game. This is a fun football game. You know, both these teams could be 0-whatever at this point in time, and this would still be a great game. But no, this should be a good battle down there. I'm looking forward to that one. And then, you know, Keenan Christian, he had that big emergence a few weeks back, and he's been a little more quiet, no big crazy highlight plays, but he's still been playing well. Slovis has still been playing really good. So I suspect this to be a good football game. And like I said, you can't deny the receivers on USC side, which are always fun to watch. The other big game is another rivalry, and it's up in the Bay Area, and that's Cal going to Stanford. That's a battle for the Stanford Axe, you know, the big game. Everybody, I can't not think of this game and think of the band is on the field. The band is on the field, you know, that infamous play, man. So this is a lot of fun, too. And, you know, Cal and Stanford are obviously not in the main stage anymore as of late. But this, once again, if this is a bad football game, I'd be surprised. So Stanford's held the Axe since 2010. Cal's been, you know, a little bit down, but should be a fun football game to watch nonetheless.
All right, and who's your W prospect of the week out west?
All right, so I'm going, and I don't think I've touched on him yet, but I'm going to Hunter Bryant, the tight end from Washington. So the couple of the stats, 6'2", 240. So far in the year, 41 receptions, 647 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Kind of stats of note, he's only had one game with less than 3 receptions. He's averaging about 4.5 a game. And his best game of the year actually came against his toughest defensive opponent in Utah. So in that game, he had over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. So interesting that he's had, like against Stanford, he had one catch for 8 yards, and Stanford's not great. And then against Utah, he goes out there and smashes. He's a mismatch. His size, so his size, and it makes him harder for linebackers to cover him. And then he's bigger than the DBs. But watching him, and the clear comp is not because of play style, but size, right? So I went back and looked at Irv Smith Jr., very similar size, like within 2 pounds, but same height. Irv was quicker. To me, Irv was a little bit faster. One thing about Irv that was underrated was his blocking was actually pretty good for being a move tight end. And they had him lined up at fullback and H-back all over the place in Alabama. And that's obviously a big nod if you could be a smaller tight end and still bring in the block game. But watching Hunter Bryant, I've seen him, you know, be called tight end one, everything else. I wasn't completely sold. And I guess the problem I had was for his size, you'd think he'd be a faster, speedier guy, but he actually lacks top end speed and lacks quickness, which it irks me a little bit. It bugs me a little bit. So I kind of wanted to reach out to you guys because even though he's getting the spotlight, maybe I'm not necessarily high on him as like Debbie, the prospect of the week, because I think he's so terrific, but more so he's a terrific name that's getting a ton of buzz. Am I missing something? And if I am, fill me in, because I'd love to hear it.
So I was listening to what you were saying, and you're absolutely right. Like, he's somebody when you just, if you just looked at him, right, he wears number one. He's got that, you know, 6 foot, 239, 240-pound frame. You would think that he's more in the Irv Smith, Evan Engram type role, but he's not. He's not athletic like that, man. He's just not very athletic. But when I was watching the Oregon State game this past week, he just finds ways to get open, man. And he took a quick slant. I think it was like 50-something yards to the house. It was called back, penalty holding play. But it's just, he finds a way. He wins with a lot of technique. There was a couple of routes that he made. One of them was an overthrow by Eason, but in the open field, he's very nifty. He's very crafty. It doesn't look pretty. Sort of just like Jason Witten. It doesn't look pretty when Witten does it, right? He's not very fast, but he always gets open somehow, some way. You know, the joke was Tony Romo. You know, Witten is always open. I mean, third down, he's going to Witten, and you just can't stop it. So I think if you're looking for that explosive, flashy, bursty tight end, it's not him. It's not Hunter Bryant. He has a lot more refinement to his game. And when I look at his stats, man, I think he's gotten, because I posted something the other day, I think he's up over 600 receiving yards as a tight end. I mean, that's pretty impressive in the Pac-12, I mean, for a tight end in general. So I'm with you, Matt. I don't think he is some elite prospect, but I do think he's somebody that can win at the next level if put in the right situation.
Yeah, I did get the so I watched a lot of Albert O from last year. And one thing, you know, Albert O is a little more athletic and he's bigger than Hunter. But Albert, his bread and butter was creating separation and getting open in the middle of the field and kind of doing what you're saying and being crafty. And Hunter Bryant does do a really good job of that. There was one play, and I feel like it was against Utah, where he started running like this little shallow out, kind of stopped, ran like a little hesitation, like he was lost almost, and then cut back across the field and just got himself open. Then the field was already separated at that point. Safety's running deep, you know, deep halves, and then he was just able to carve up the field for, it was like a 35-yard gain. I'm like, that's a veteran play right there, right? So it's just, I guess I wish I had more of the metrics from his side based off of his size. If he was 6'4", 250, I'd be like, that's a terrific tight end doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing. But because he's light and because he's short, like I hope he's in a conditioning and speed program like as soon as the season's over. And I hope he's training to kind of bolster those up a little bit, because I think he could shoot his stock up a little bit more. It just left a little bit to be desired for me, but I hear what you're saying.
A lot of people that watched him were kind of enamored with how he started off. Like, he started off and he looked like he was going to take that ascension, you know, that he would get quicker and he would be better, more like the Evan Engram type, you know, the move tight end. And he's, you know, you see him and he's just not that player. And I think people thought he was going to be, like, he was a couple years ago, he was just like a sexy name after his freshman year or so. And I just haven't seen enough improvement. I think he's still going to be a decent tight end, but yeah, same, I agree. You guys hit the nail on the head exactly with that. So, all right, Matt, you're going to go freshman and deep at the same time.
It's a two birds with one stone. I really like this kid named Jaron Mingum, is how you pronounce it, I believe. He's a running back out of Colorado, so he's a freshman, true freshman. Couple of items of note here. Three-star athlete. He went to high school in Michigan, but he grew up in Houston, so shout out to H-Town. But he enrolled early enrolled in the spring of last year. And things that I like that aren't on a stat sheet, but he had a 3.5 GPA of his first semester in college. I go back my first semester of college, I feel like I was drinking from a fire hose. You know what I mean? I don't even know what I got, but it wasn't easy. He's got the bloodline. So his dad holds the records for tackles all time at Bowling Green University. So let's get into this. So he's 6'2", 215, true freshman. And on the year, he's got 413 yards with three touchdowns, added 10 receptions for 41 yards. His workload is really starting to gain a little bit steam over the past couple weeks. And Fontenot, who's in front of him, who's only a sophomore, doesn't blow me away. But this goes back to, you know, my love for Chenault and how that doesn't really work with that offense. You know, it's kind of like a Rager down in TCU now. It's like, wrong offense. Get that player somewhere else where it benefits him. Mel Tucker wants to run the football, right? This is what we've been talking about. And watching Mel Tucker, you know, increase the workload for this kid, Jaren, I can only see this thing getting more and more steam, getting better and better. And so getting into the tape a little bit, the kid is got very good contact balance. And he's only 6'2", 215. He doesn't look like a big old boy. Like, he got flat. You know, he looks a leaner back. He doesn't look like a big old back. Like, when I think of a big back like that, I think somebody a little heftier, you know what I mean, filling out the pants a little bit more. This dude's lean, but he's got really good contact balance. But he's also got good power. So he's got a good combination of, you know, those attributes you want to see in a back at that young age. I would be really surprised if this kid wasn't, you know, flirting with 1,000 yards next year, if not more, and really taking maybe a lead there, because I could see that transition happening now. So he's a freshman, but he's also the deep dive, because I feel like this kid could make an actual real jump next year to be putting himself on people's radar.
I will have to check him out, man. I have not even kind of mentioned, not even noticed him at all yet. So very good, man. Very good. All right, Ray, I'm going to take us down south. You got several good games down there this weekend, man. What you want to talk about?
Games of the week this week, I've got TCU versus Oklahoma, Texas versus Baylor, and then Texas A&M versus Georgia. So let's start with TCU and Oklahoma. When you're talking about Devy prospects on the TCU side, you start and stop with Jalen Reagor. It's just been a disappointing season for him overall. I think Max Duggan is going to be a decent quarterback here in the future, but he's still a run first, true freshman quarterback. So production is just not going to be there for Reagor this year. I'm pretty sure he's going to declare. I've got some inside information, so I'm pretty confident that he's going to declare for the 2020 draft, and I think he should. But from in the backfield at TCU, they've got a running back named Darius Anderson, who is very, very intriguing. He's a very good running back. He's somebody that you'll probably be able to get off of your waiver wires after your dynasty rookie draft. So keep an eye on number 6, the running back from TCU, Darius Anderson. Oklahoma side, you know the usual suspects, right? CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Hurts, Kennedy Brooks, now that Trey Sermon is out for the season, Ramondre Stevenson, and then some of the young guys. Theo Weiss made a couple of nice plays versus Baylor. Jaden Hazelwood, he looked good as well. Charleston Rambo. So just kind of watching those Oklahoma receivers, what they do. And then Jalen Hurts, this is another opportunity for him to pad his resume versus a pretty good TCU defense. So excited to see that. It is in Norman, so they've got the home field advantage. I expect Oklahoma to win this and win this big, and I expect Jalen Hurts to play well in this contest. The team that lost to Oklahoma last week has got a big game versus Texas. So you've got Baylor versus Texas. It's been a very disappointing year for Texas. When we talked at the beginning of the year on this show, I had Sam Ehlinger as my dark horse candidate for the Heisman Trophy. I thought Texas would be poised to win the Big 12, and they have lost quite a few games this year. Just is not clicking for them. But they do have Devin Duvernay, Colin Johnson, Brennan Eagles. I haven't talked about Jake Smith in a while because he has not been playing. Texas has been bad. Keontae Ingram looks bad. Sam Ehlinger looks bad. Tom Herman, the head coach, they just look bad right now. They look disjointed. So it's a good opportunity for Baylor and the quarterback Brewer, wide receiver that I'll talk about here in a little bit, to bounce back after that disappointing, heartbreaking loss versus Oklahoma last week. And then the final game of the week down south, Texas A&M versus Georgia. Last week, Jake Fromm was my Devy prospect of the week, and he did everything to disappoint me in that contest. When you look at the box score, he had 3 touchdowns. He had 110 passing yards, and 51 of them came on one play. One more time, 110 passing yards, and 51 of those 110 yards came on one play. On 28 completions, or it was either 28 completions or 28 pass. Either way, I'm just out. I'm done. I don't care who dislikes me. I don't care who thinks this is a bad. I'm done, and I'm out on Jake Fromm. I want nothing to do with Jake Fromm on my dynasty rosters. I would love for you guys to jump in right here. I don't really need to talk about DeAndre Swift. He's a stud. We don't have to talk about DeAndre Swift. He's great. Texas A&M, they've got another guy that I'll talk about here in a second, but I just want you guys' opinion on Jake Fromm, because I am out on this kid. O-U-T, OWT, however many ways you can spell out. I'm done. I'm out the door. Goodbye, Jake Fromm.
So what this is right now is there's those two drunk ladies saying, "This is Jake Fromm," and then and raise that white cat going, "No, not for me, man."
Exactly. My hands are, I'm just, no, not for me. He's not for me.
Yeah, he's just he's a game manager. That's what he is, man. Like, he might be okay, but he's not going to be anything great. Like, he's going to be like Alex Smith before he got to the Kansas City Chiefs, you know? Probably not that good, though. You know, he'll take care of the ball, and, you know, he won't ever win you games.
110 yeah. yards. Yeah, 110, 51 on one play.
Yeah, it's... Oof.
The thing that trips me out now is, like, I'm watching him play, and all I can think about is, how in the world did he make Fields and Easton transfer? I don't, you know what I mean? It was like they must have been in love with him and love the guy that he is and everything else. Or does he have something on Kirby or something that we don't know about? But when I watch him play, I go, there's, you know, think about pickup football or whatever. It's like, I don't care if you're telling me that's a starting quarterback. These two dudes are better. So what, how did this happen? Like, what, I can't not think that every time I'm watching him taking a snap.
And I don't want to hear he played against a tough Auburn defense. I don't want to hear that. Like, that's the worst. This is a third-year starting quarterback. I don't want to hear it. Auburn's been shredded by other quarterbacks before. Well, he doesn't have pass catchers. He's at Georgia. Make it happen. I don't want to hear it. I just don't want him anywhere near my – I'd rather have Jeff Driscoll quarterback in my fantasy team opposed to Jake Fromm, and I'm not being funny.
There we go. I like it, man. Fire, baby, fire. All right, go back to Baylor for your Debbie prospect of the league. This kid, look, he pops every time you watch Baylor, man.
Man, he does. And the man is, his name is Denzel Mims, 6'3", 215-pound wide receiver out of Baylor. I think we may have talked about him a little bit last week, but Baylor just has, they've got a good track record with wide receivers from, you know, getting them to the league. Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, Terrence Williams, damn it, Matt, we had the other guy. You gave me somebody else the other day, and I forgot his name. But they continuously put players in the NFL, and I think Denzel Mims is another one on that long list of Baylor wideouts. He's really good. He's really good. His body control, he's big, he's fast, he's physical. He's aggressive at the point of catch, which I really like. I like when receivers attack the ball. He's good after the catch. And he's been productive. So his sophomore season, he actually broke out because he had 61 catches, 1,087 yards, and 8 TDs. Kind of a down junior season, 55 receptions, 794, and 8. I know he dealt with some injuries last year. But this year, in his final year, he's right back up to being super productive, 50 receptions, 767 yards, 10 touchdowns. He's not inside my top 10 for 2020 wide receivers, but he's somebody that I believe is a screaming value in your third round of your dynasty rookie drafts next year. If you can walk away with a player like Denzel Mims, I think you're in good shape because I think he's got the talent to be a starting wide receiver at the next level. Think a more athletic version of Kelvin Harmon.
I think I just seen Andrew jumped him up to wide receiver 6 on his rankings. Not overall Debbie, but for the 2020 class. Which, you know, I gotta put a little note next to that because, you know, Andrew's been pretty good at this stuff. So that was pretty interesting, man. Now, he's a stud. I like it a lot.
I think he's one of those guys, Matt, that he'll get into camp and he'll end up starting somewhere next year. I could really see that happening.
Well, and it's a great – so, like, okay, you can leave the draft, right? You take the first round and second round. You get backs and whatever you can, if quarterbacks – you're telling me in the third round, maybe a Denzel Mims, and you could potentially get a Michael Pittman in the fourth round, something like that. Like, that's a good day. You know what I mean? And these guys are getting slept on, so I'm excited for this stuff coming up.
Well, you make a good point because, and Dwight, I know you'll chime in on this. You make a good point, Matt. Everybody is going to get somebody good in the first round of your dynasty rookie drafts. So I don't care if you got pick 1 or pick 12. Everyone's going to get a talented player. You win your draft, you win dynasty by hitting players in the third round, getting Terry McLaurin in the third, in the fourth round, grabbing a Denzel Mims. That's where you win, you know? So if you're listening to shows like this, the DDP and other good Devy resources, where when you're in your third and fourth round, you're just salivating because you see some of these names waiting there when everybody else has no damn clue, and they're just kind of picking, you know, when MLF has the next highest ADP, but you know, the hell with what this ADP says. I know I've got to go get Denzel Mims. That's how you win at Dynasty.
Hey, man, another kid you've mentioned a couple times. Who's Freshman of the Week, man?
Yeah, every week I'm more and more impressed with Texas A&M freshman Isaiah Spiller. He's got the size of an NFL running back right now, 6'1", 220. On the season, get this, 769 rushing yards and 8 TDs. But what's even more impressive is he's got 22 receptions as a true freshman. 22 for 153 yards. He's big. He's athletic. He's fast. He's playing in the SEC against some of the top talent in the country. And he's got the high school prep profile behind his name. He's the ninth best running back in the 2019 class. So it's not like he's a kid that was slept on, that came out of nowhere. He's a four-star recruit. Isaiah Spiller is somebody that I will be aggressively targeting in my Devy drafts next year because I think he's got three-down workhorse potential at the next level. Some of these guys, Kenneth Gainwell, Isaiah Spiller, the kid from Breece Hall from Iowa State, players like this who we weren't really talking about coming into the season, this is where you smash in your Devy drafts next year. So Isaiah Spiller is somebody that I will have on my rosters next year. He's really good.
Right. Love it, man. Love it.
All right, Dwight, we're heading up north, man. What's the game of the week up there?
Yeah, we got a big one this week, man. Hopefully. I mean, hopefully it ends up building up to the hype. I feel like I say that every week and then watch my team. I think every game I've had this, like last week, I don't even want to talk about it, but it wasn't even really a game. So this week we got Penn State, number 8, going up to number 2, with Ohio State, so it's at the Horseshoe. It's a game where Penn State got taken to the wire last week against Indiana. I don't think they've looked that good. You know, obviously they lost to Minnesota, and I don't even know how they're ranked 8th, honestly. I like a lot of their pieces. I guess it depends on how Sean Clifford does, but I like KJ Hamler, and I'm really liking Journey Brown the more they give him the ball and they can like let him take the lead role. I love everything I see about him, but I think it's going to be just another Ohio State blowout. And you know, Ohio State's clicking, man. Justin Fields is trying to make kind of he's got a chance. I think if he does really well against Penn State and he does really well against Michigan, he's got a chance to sneak into that Heisman ceremony, especially if, you know, I don't think he'll win it. I think Burrow's got it pretty good, pretty locked up right now, but he could be the third one invited. He's still putting up the great stats, and J.K. Dobbins having a great year. Chris Olave is kind of stepping up a little bit at wide receiver, so yeah, I just like a lot of the pieces in this game. Hopefully it's a fun game for a little while. My father-in-law is a huge Penn State fan. So for his sake, let's pray that they keep it close. But unfortunately, it's the game of the week just based on stature. It's one of the only good games we have up this way this time of year. And I just don't have a lot of high hopes for it, though, unfortunately. I don't know if you guys see it any differently. I don't know if you can possibly see Penn State hanging with Ohio State.
I think it's Ohio State's to lose. But real fast, Dwight, I was wondering if you had a chance to dig into that tight end from Penn State at all in preps for this or just over the last couple weeks. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about him recently.
Yeah, he looks he's dominant. Every game I've seen him against, even like the games they lose, like Minnesota, I mean, every time they needed a catch, it was Freiermuth, I guess is how you would say it. Every time it was just him. And he's always open. He always creates – he's quick enough to get open and get that separation. Obviously not blazing fast or anything. It's kind of hard to comp him with anybody, but he kind of has that he almost looks like George Kittle, just like he's always freaking open. And I don't know, man.
How do you feel about him compared to Hopkins, Bryson Hopkins? I know you're a Hopkins fan. How do you feel about him compared to
Bryson? Hopkins more. I think he's more of a versatile weapon, but I think Freiermuth is more of that, like, it's really hard. I'm not the greatest at evaluating tight ends, I'm not going to lie. I like Hopkins seems like he's more of a dominant tight end. Like, he really take over a game, whereas Freiermuth is, he's a shade below. There's a couple of good guys coming out next year. I think they were not, this class didn't look good at the beginning of the season, but there's a couple guys that have really stepped up this year, and then that's not even counting Brandon O, who hasn't looked that great this year, or Alberto, sorry. Yeah, definitely ones I got to watch a little more, because when I watch games, I tend to focus on running backs and wide receivers and quarterbacks. I don't, you know, but then you're like, oh, hey, there's the tight end with a great catch, you know? But I don't focus on them when I watch, you know? I don't spend a play watching what Friermuth does, you know? But I knew that he blocks, and he's tough, and he's kind of a blue collar, kind of like, I guess more like what TJ Hockenson was last year too. Maybe not quite as athletic, but yeah, he's a good looking kid, man. Good looking kid, so.
I like it, man. So who's the Debbie prospect of the week for you this week?
Yeah, I went a little bit deeper with this one, too. It's a kid who's who kind of caught my radar. Just he was putting up some good numbers, and I kind of went back over the last I almost had him in a couple weeks ago, and I just like what he's doing this year. He's Brendan Knox from Marshall. So he's a small school guy, 6 foot, 220 pounds, great, great size. He has 1,000 yards this year, 10 touchdowns. He also has 12 catches. He's only a sophomore, but what I really like about him is his patience and his foot movement, and he sets up blocks really well. He follows his blockers. You know, he jumps back and forth real well and kind of reads the holes as they come alive. The only thing I want to see from him to make him like an elite prospect would be like to see more burst and more explosion. Like you see, sometimes he'll find that hole and he'll dance a little bit too much. Like he's trying to set up a block that's already there and he needs to just hit it and go. So I'd like to see a little bit more of that, but I like a lot of what, and he's always looking to finish runs too. Like he gets to that second level, and I mean he just runs over people. So he's a lot of fun to watch. And when I watch Marshall, there's really not much going on there, so they kind of focus on him a little bit. So he doesn't. I think he's right around 5.5 yards per carry. So it's not amazing, but I really like a lot of what I have saw about him. A guy with a little bit of development next year. Could potentially be, you know, like a later pick, but I kind of dug a little bit deeper with my prospect of the week, too. So I feel like I've gone through so many of them. We talk about so many of these guys every week, so I wanted to go a little bit deeper, but I really like what I see about from him and a guy that could sneak up there next year. So
I like that, man. You know, I like going deep, so it's I like new names, man. I want some new names on the radar. You know, we're just talking about. We're all antsy now for 2020, and this I'm getting ready for the draft day. You know what I mean? I'm already doing my own little mocks and everything else. But at the same time, what's better than new names, right? Like, who's, you know, Isaiah Spiller and this cat and this is fun, right? It's being able to be nearsighted and farsighted at the same time, right? That's what makes this game so fun.
Right. Yeah. Like I was doing my Debbie ranks today, and I'm like, I'm almost pushing 2020 guys down. Like, get out of the way. Like, you know, let's go. Next guy up, man. Let's go. And I think I was probably ranking some of them too high because I was like, oh, I'm ready for the next guys. You're ready for the next ones. Bring them on. So then my freshman of the week, we're going to go up to Iowa. And Tyler Goodson last week looked absolutely – just looked really, really good against Minnesota. Really popped out. He's kind of caught the eye here. He's kind of worked his way into a starting role. They've been kind of searching for a starter this year. And as a freshman, he's doing some really good things. He left with an ankle injury, but still rushed for like 97 yards. He had a couple really key first downs. You just like a lot about his explosion. He's got 20 catches this year as well, so he's versatile out of the backfield. And he really stepped up last week. And Iowa's a team that kind of needs like an offensive identity as well. I almost went Tyrone Tracy, another freshman that last week looked amazing in that game. So I know that... Kane doesn't want to hear that, but yeah. So Iowa looked, you know, like they actually had a functional offense last week, and it was because of these two freshmen. So I just chose to focus on Tyler Goodson. I didn't dive too much into his recruiting history or anything like that, but he just really popped out on tape, and I think it's his job to take if he wants it. So I was really impressed with Tyler Goodson. Kind of want to watch a little bit more of him this year, so in the off season. So yeah.
All right, Dwight, so recently you guys did a live mock based off the 2020 projections on who's picking where, man. Fill us in on that a little bit. Who was all involved? How'd that go? What'd that look like?
Yeah, it was kind of a silly, fun thing we did to raise some money for Matt Miller's 417 Foundation. And it was me, our past co-host Andrew Harbaugh, then Kane Fossil from the Debbie Diet, and Zach Thomas from the Dynasty Draft Room. We just got together and did just this quick little silly draft. We took the draft's first round, you know, 1 through 32, exactly in the order that it's projected right now, and then just drafted skill players. That's all we did. It was just drafted skill players. We went back and forth. We all took that and just kind of an idea of what, you know, the draft would look like just offensively next year. We found some pretty fun ones in there. Like, I led off with Joe Burrow, which is likely going to happen. Jerry Jeudy went second. CeeDee Lamb third. DeAndre Swift fourth to the Dolphins. And then everybody made fun of me when I at five I took Jalen Reagor to the Jets. That was for you, Ray. So that was strictly for you, baby. And I thought he'd be fun in that offense too.
I like it though.
Yeah.
Right. And then we took. Yep. Tua went six to the Bucks, which could honestly happen also if the Bucks are like, you know, hey, we've got gifted this great quarterback. Let's do it. You know, he can sit behind Jameis for a year or two. So. Yeah, interesting. Broncos, Henry Ruggs, 7 to the Broncos. Jonathan Taylor, 8 to the Falcons, which would be, would that be fun?
That's juicy. Fun.
Cam Akers at 9 to the Cardinals. I know Ray liked that. So Tyler Johnson went to the Lions at 10. Bryson Hopkins went 11, which kind of surprised me a little bit, to the Jags. J.K. Dobbins to the Chargers at 12. Then it started getting a little crazy. That's kind of, you know, other than the Bryson Hopkins pick, I wasn't too surprised with a lot of those. Then we went T. Higgins at 13 to the Browns, Brian Edwards at 14 to the Raiders. I had the Eagles taking LaVisca Chenault at 15, which I think they really, really need some wide receivers.
Yeah, help, so that makes sense. Don't
think take them in the first round. The Dolphins took Tylan Wallace at 16. Yeah. The Titans, Justin Herbert at 17, which could very well happen if somehow he falls that far. You know, it's one of the few offenses that could – Justin Herbert could step right in and play day one, and they're – you know, he could fit.
So you go from one Oregon quarterback to the next?
I know. But they're crazy different, so yeah. And Zach took – this one's for you, Ray. Jalen Hurts to the Panthers at 18. 19 was Denzel Mim to the Raiders. 20 – Antonio Gandy-Golden to the Rams, or the Jaguars, sorry. Then I had the Cowboys taking Hunter Bryan at 21. Isaiah Hodgkins at 22 to the Colts. The Najee Harris to the Chiefs at 23.
Love that.
That'd be fun.
Love that.
Fun. Kane went out left field and took Mason Fine to the Vikings. You still on the tilt for the Najee one?
Yeah, all the Najee stock up would be Twitter blow up right there.
What? Okay, hold on real quick, Dwight. Hold on. Running backs
to the Chiefs, I think, would just be instantly 101.
What would happen? What would y'all do? What would you do realistically if Najee goes to the Chiefs? What would you guys do if Najee Harris is drafted by the Chiefs? Where do you put him at?
He's got to be in the conversation for the 101 in single quarterback leagues. I mean, as crazy as that is, I honestly feel that the top backs anyways that land in KC will have you know, I'd love to see the draft percentage of the ADP afterwards, but you know the ADP is going to be like 102 or something like that, right? Something crazy, man, but any of those guys, man, especially if it's the top tier guys, the ETNs, the Taylors, the Swifts. But if you start even telling me Cam or JK or any of those guys in KC, it's going to be stock really, really up.
Yeah, and realistically, they could get one of those guys in the second or third round, probably, depending on how it falls. So, all right. And after Najee, it was the Vikings taking Mason Fine at 24, the Dolphins taking Jacob Eason at 25. Zach went kind of crazy and took Nico Collins to the Bills at 26, which kind of caught all of us off guard. Andrew took KJ Hamler to the Packers, 27. Devontae Smith to the Seahawks at 28, which would be pretty sexy. I took Travis Etienne going to the Ravens at 29. Brandon Ayuk going to the Saints at 30, which would be hella fun. Patriots taking Albert O at 31, and Kane went J.D. Spielman to the 49ers at 32. So, no Chuba. We failed you, Ray.
How did ETN last that long is what I want to know.
That's what I was wondering, too. He fell to me, and I'm like, oh, my God. I don't even know how well he would fit with the Ravens, but why not, you know?
Right. At that point, you got to take best player available, man. That's cool, though.
Yeah, my favorite pick in that draft, I would say it was between the Akers to Arizona fit or Najee Harris to KC. Those were my favorite picks of that draft, because I think Akers in Arizona, which, you know, he's not going to be a round one kid, so is there a chance they move on from David Johnson, Kenyon Drake getting re-signed? That would be nice. That would be, and he's already used to running behind a crap offensive line as well. So it'd be a logical.
I think one of my favorites is like a love hate, and it's kind of a double edged sword. But LaVisca to the Eagles, right? I think that's what it was. You guys know I love LaVisca. The Eagles though can't keep receivers healthy. I feel like this has been a pattern for X amount of years.
He fit perfectly,
man. So it's like, oh yes, for Carson, you know, finally give him somebody. Like, you know how excited I was for DeSean Jackson to be back in Philadelphia, and the fact that he can't get on the field and Alshon. So if Visca could stay healthy, it's almost like just pass on him and get a guy you know could stay healthy, just for the sake of health. I guess I don't know, but I like the fit.
My lead into Cam was, why not replace David Johnson with a better, younger version of David Johnson?
Oh, I could dig it. DJ's done, dude. Like, he's not even falling off a cliff. He hit the wall before the cliff even came, man. He hit that center divider, and that car was broke down, dude. I'm done. And then I've seen some disrespectful offers come from the DJ owners now that, like, the writing's on the wall. And it just makes me laugh, but it's just the name of the game, right? Getting ahead of it, trying to play it out. Sometimes we don't see it coming like that, but geez, man, I don't know. I don't think Drake's a long-term answer either.
I got offered DJ for David Montgomery today, and I'm like, no, just no. And I'm a rebuilding team anyway, so why the hell would I want a 28-year-old running back to begin with? You know, like,
would y'all pay a middle 2022nd for him?
No,
me neither. No. I can't.
But I do think. I've been saying sell David Johnson all year. I've been very vocal about it, and a lot of people have given me a hard time about it. I think he resurfaces somewhere next year, and he's going to give us one more legit fantasy. I think he's hurt. I really do think he's injured. He had a back injury, ankle injury, but I could see Bruce Arians kicking the tires on him next year in Tampa Bay. And then DJ giving us those glimpses for another season and a half, and then he'll finally be done. But I think they're gonna eat the dead cap and get rid of him. I just don't see them when you make someone active and don't even play him. I don't think they're bringing him back. I don't think he's in the plans for Cliff.
The Arians call is so good. I haven't seen that. I didn't even think of that. That's terrific, man. That's a great call. That's realistic too.
I think it's going to out of the division, far away. He ends up in Tampa Bay, Arian style. You know, Arians did it with Carson Palmer. He loved Carson, brought Carson, now revitalized his career. I think DJ, I'm going to tell everybody this: if you can buy low on DJ, and I mean low, 2024th, some random player, Alan Lazard. If you can do something like that for David Johnson. Buy low on DJ this offseason. I would do that, and just what's a 2024 to get, you know, somebody who could potentially end up in a better situation.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is a wrap for this week. Matt, can you tell everybody what you're working on, where they can find you, man?
Y'all know I'm at Twitter, Commish McGriff. Real fast, my little sign off here is, as everyone's running into their 2020 playoffs, people are trying to bolster those rosters. Some people are looking to sell some assets. If you can find a team playoff bound who's got devy assets who don't help them now, and you can send them a vet to help their playoff run, try to buy some of these devy assets if you're not contending. It's a really, really good time to buy. So if you can go out and get one of those guys now, do it and run with that thing. But, you know, you'll know I'm at Twitter, at Commish McGriff.
All right. Ray?
Yeah, on Twitter, at RayGQ, Destination Devy. Every Monday, doing a couple of mailbag strategy shows here and there. Work over on DLF. I'm doing the prospect play videos are live on DLF now. So if you want to, and I've actually started my true scouting process. So I'm going back to week one with some of these prospects and breaking them down in 3-week increments. So the next one is Travis Etienne's performance and skills from week one through week three of the college football season. So got a lot of time. So I really want to take my time and go back and scout these prospects and not just post highlights. So breaking down Travis Etienne, and we'll do some other guys. So DLF, Twitter, check me out.
You can find me at Twitter at FFPeoplesChamp, and you can find the work at DLF and my rankings at DHH, which I just updated today, although I'll probably tweak them about 26 more times in the next week. But yeah, you can find us on Twitter at DeviHappyHour, and we will talk to you guys next week.